I have to end today at 10:15, so shiur is a little bit briefer than normal. My son is starting Kfar Chaim today, my favorite Israeli high school. So today's the first day I have to drop him off, so I'll be out of the Beis Medrash for about an hour, but you have Makaros, and I'll be back around 11:15. We like to start each day of shiur. Welcome to Akiva Richmond. We like to start each day of shiur, as we saw last week, which just trying to raise certain midos so you want to think about and be aware of. I'll try to tether them to the parsha. Parshas Ki Tetzeh describes those who are allowed entry to the Jewish people from whom Gerim can come and those who can't. So there's a striking contrast between Ammon and Moab who are barred because they didn't offer us water and bread. And I'll talk with you in Mirtz Hashem after Yom Tov, not so much now, but after Yom Tov, when a lot of visitors come after Yom Tov, about hospitality and being gracious and how do you build the trade of hospitality. And we'll have some of the boys from out of town teach the boys from in town what that means, because we'll see why it's so hard to have a Knesset Orchim where when you dive in India and Israel have word there and there are 7,000 people coming. But the stark contrast between Ammon and Moab, al devar shelo kidmu eschem balechem uvamayim, and lo titzaev mitzri, kigeri yisabir tzo. You should be grateful to the Egyptians because they hosted you for 210 years. It's hard to read that pasuk without laughing. The contrast is stunning, and we'll talk about, Ammon and Moab, they didn't offer you bread and water. They can't enter. But the Egyptians, welcome. Come right away, because we stayed with you for 210 years, and you put us in the presidential suite of torture and persecution. So the point is as follows. All moral traits, even when they're interactive, are important not only because the recipient of those traits and the generosity of spirit is enhanced by it, but also reflexively, because it makes you a better person. So the hunt for being a moral person is not just to create a firmer society and to show these traits and to deliver emotional services to other people, but just to be a better person. And that's why morality for a Jew is never subjective. It's never based on social standards, what other people are doing. Well, why should I be more moral than others? You're chasing the elusive image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's an endless, endless pursuit. And you should never top off or max out because others around you are underperforming or have slipped in their moral and ethical considerations. And gratitude is one of those. Gratitude is important because a person who does a favor for you, who sacrifices time, energy, resources, deserves that compliment, deserves that recognition. But more important than anything else, gratitude is a self-corrective against taking things for granted, against being spoiled, against expecting things, against losing an appreciation for the important things in life, losing your perspective and your proportion. The Chovas HaLevavos, which is probably one of the great medieval Musar Machshava Svarim, written by a Talmud of the Ramban, Rabbeinu Bachya Ibn Bakuda, claims that Hakaras HaTov is the core trait. He feels that's the trait upon which all religion should be built. The entire relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be built upon Hakaras HaTov, thanking Hashem for all that He has given you. I'm not sure that I agree that it's the core trait. I think that could be very dangerous when you live after the Holocaust and it's hard to necessarily build all of religion on Hakaras HaTov. It has to be built on, in my opinion, other issues, and Rav Amital spoke about this a lot. But that's a different conversation, what the core trait is, but it's certainly an extremely, extremely important trait. And the Egyptians don't deserve a Hakaras HaTov. These Egyptians are drowning in the Yamsuf. But we have to appreciate every benefit extended to us, even if those benefits also carried persecution and suffering. For 210 years, we had no place to live. We would have starved. There was a famine raging in the entire ancient Mediterranean crescent. And the Egyptians took us in. Now, they took us in, and they tortured us, and they enslaved us, and they persecuted us, and therefore they were punished. But it has nothing to do with the Egyptians. It's an abstract concept of not taking things for granted, not expecting things to come. And that's the source when you expect things for so many toxic traits. Because when you expect things, not only are you spoiled and you don't value things, but you don't get what you want. You get angry, you get frustrated, you take it out on other people. Much of anger is based on dashed expectations. You think you deserve something, it doesn't happen, and therefore you get angry and you get resentful at people or at life. If you don't expect any service or anyone to serve you, and you value things that are given to you deeply, try to work in it deeply, not just to say thank you, but to deeply appreciate it. I say this, and I'll say this probably 100 times this year. I think of Rav Lichtenstein probably 10 times a day. And all 10 of them are about the traits that he showed us, not about the Chiddushei Torah he taught us. The Chiddushei Torah I have in the books on my shelf. but the traits that he showed us, and I think about this so often, he didn't expect anything. He was so appreciative of anyone who did anything for him. I mean, we were falling over ourselves to serve him. We were competing. Who would drive Rav Aaron to the shear? Who would take care of Rav Aaron? And he was so appreciative, genuinely, not just a false show. He was very appreciative, and we sensed that he didn't expect anything. And the things that were given to him, he was very, very grateful for and appreciative of. Rav Gusman, who was a very, very big Talmud Chacham in Europe, in the city of Vilna, who then actually joined the partisans. He fought with the partisans, and then he moved to Chaim Berlin, and then he opened a yeshiva towards the end of his life in Yerushalayim called Netzach Yisrael. He used to go learn in that yeshiva because it's located in the center of town. And I remember as an older man in his 80s, I once was walking behind him in the small little base medrash that he opened, and he stopped short, and I bumped into him, and I ricocheted off his 80-year-old body like a rock. That's how strong he was. He was a partisan fighter. Legend has it, I think it's actually true, that after the Holocaust, he personally hunted down the people who killed his family, and he killed them with his bare hands. And he applied the din of Goel Hadam. He felt there was a mitzvah of Goel Hadam to find the murderers of his family, wherever it was, and to a very famous story about the shoes and showing up to a funeral of a chayal. I'll send you that story. It's online, but I don't have time to tell you the whole story. Beautiful, beautiful story, just to help you continue to break down these stigmas between Haredim and non-Haredim and people that are not. He didn't serve in the army, but you'll see what he talked about when he went to his beautiful funeral for a lost soldier. Anyway, every day in his yeshiva, in the middle of Yerushalayim, he'd be watering the plants personally. Someone once asked him, "You're a big Rosh Yeshiva. You'll see I have a svarim on my desk. They're called Kuntrasei Shiurim. They're written on Kiddushin, Bava Metzia, and Bava Kama." Probably the most thorough lamdasha treatment of sugyas ever written. He really writes it like a medical abstract. Before each section, and each section is about 20 pages long, he has like a summary that literally reads like a journal. He gives little tidbits of what he's going to talk about, which I haven't found in any other sefer. That's how organized it is. So he used to water the plants in front of his yeshiva, and someone once asked him, "You're a big Rosh Yeshiva, why are you watering the plants?" He said, "Because the plants hid me when I was a partisan. When I was hiding in the forest, I would hide behind plants and behind trees and behind brushes and thickets. So I wanted to compensate them for..." He wasn't running to Poland to water the plants that hit him. These plants in Yerushalayim were not going to communicate through email to their sister plants in Poland. "We've received compensation for your great service." Obviously, he sensed that gratitude is not about the recipient. It's about how you train yourself. And keep that in mind with all moral traits. There are two parts to moral behavior. One is obviously you want to be kind to other people, help them out, build a better world for other people, advance their condition. And it's altruistic. But in some ways, moral development is also egotistic, maybe. Because you want to be a better person. It shouldn't become egotistical, where I don't care about you, it's just about me. But it has to have that component that you realize that even if someone comes to your door and doesn't deserve tzedakah in your mind because of their life choices, it doesn't excuse or exonerate you from being a tzedakah giver. Now, unless you feel it will be counterproductive, he'll use the money for drugs and get into worse shape. But if you disagree with his life choices and you feel he should be, Rav Lichtenstein at Rav Lichtenstein Shiva, there were three groups of people that were crying their eyes out more than anyone of his Talmidim. One was the grocery store owner from Katamon that hadn't seen him in 10 years. The last 10 years of Rav Aaron's life, he lived in Alon Shvot. And the grocery store owner was bawling. He said, "I never met a nicer person in my life. He was just so kind to me and so considerate and so gentlemanly." The second group of people that were crying their eyes out were the Palestinian workers. Because every era of Rosh Hashanah, Rav Aaron would go over to each and every one of them. When everyone was busy with their Rosh Hashanah preparations and mikvah dipping and shir preparations, Rav Aaron would go over to each and every one of them and wish them a Shana Tova to them and to their entire families. They were bawling. You should have seen Muhammad and Eid, and these guys have been in the yeshiva for 20, 30 years, so they're part of the yeshiva family. And the final group of people that were crying were the Aniyim. You would walk by Rav Aaron's house at night, and there'd be a lineup of Aniyim, of poor people. And I wasn't in the room, but people told me the stories that would happen very often where Rav Aaron, being such a kind person, he would say, "Look, you have 10 children, your wife's having a hard time, your son has medical needs, your daughter has a shidduch. Maybe it's time for a lifestyle change. Maybe you should get a job instead of collecting money," in a very kind way. And these Aniyim, not knowing who Rav Aaron was, because he didn't announce himself, would say, "No, Torah is really important. I have to learn Torah. I should be getting a job. It's built on Torah." They'd start lecturing Rav Aaron about the importance of Talmud Torah. And he didn't say, "I'm Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. I sleep 2 hours a night. I know, I get it." He just listened. And then after they finished lecturing him, he wrote them lavish checks. lavish checks, huge checks that, you know, I didn't see what was on the checks, but certainly far beyond what they expected. So whether you think people deserve your chesed or not, don't sit there and be the judge, jury, and executioner for who deserves what in life in general, but certainly I want to try to create that awareness that moral behavior is sculpting your tzelem elokim as best as you can, being as best a person, as good a person as you can, and every trait is reflexive. It's not just serving the needs of the other. So do the Egyptians deserve our gratitude? They absolutely do not deserve our gratitude. They deserve to be drowned in the sea, and so they were. But for us, we have to at least stop and recognize we had nothing coming to us. We didn't deserve. We were lost and made a place to live for 200 years. So when we accept a mitzvah, obviously not immediately, there's certain halachos about when a mitzvah can and can't come, dar shlishi. So then all of a sudden we're reminding ourselves not to take things for granted. Okay. So the first two shiurim